You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Let's talk about commodities and let's talk about mining with the Major Mine Man, the man from Mergence, the director of mining at Mergence, and that's Peter Major. I want to talk to you, Peter, about all sorts of different things, but let's talk about the commodities markets before we get on to how it's affected and will affect mining in South Africa in the future. But let's talk about commodities first of all. They're enjoying a resurgence with the weaker dollar, of course.
Oh, very much so. And not just in dollar terms, but in rand terms as well, because our rand has weakened as well as the dollar price of commodities going up. So our miners have a double bonus here.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, we've seen it all before. And you'll always, I know what you're going to say to me when I ask you about gold in the future of this interview, you're going to say, well, Lindsay, it's 1960, but the long-term average is 1270 or something like that. And it will revert, it will revert to the mean. I know that. But on the other hand, you have to enjoy what's going on at the moment. And you must be enjoying it.
Look, oh, geez, I'm not enjoying it nearly as much as I should because I'm not long gold shares. Yes, I thought by the time this thing cracked 1600, it was too much. It was too much good too soon. And maybe just being here and being in the industry so long has turned me into a pessimist. But long may it last. And I'm actually willing to endure the discomfort of not having gold shares just because it's good for the industry that I love and I've been in all my life. And it's great for the country. And it's helping the decline in jobs and the decline of our mining industry.
And do you know what? One of the themes that comes up regularly when I speak to people about gold, and I've been focusing on gold for a while now because it stood out to me as one of the go-to asset classes of the year, along with the weaker dollar, so I got both right, is that The gold companies are behaving differently to the past. In other words, when it came to, you remember Venkat from Anglo Gold Ashanti? You remember him, obviously.
Yeah. Yep.
He was the one that became the accountant. He went from CFO to CEO. And while he was CFO, he did things differently. He concentrated on free cash flow. And I think a lot of the commodity companies are now sort of employing more disciplined regimes when it comes to managing their companies and not just going out and saying, well, our share price is 500 rand a share and therefore we have to go out and buy something in order to, you know, take advantage of our high share price. It's changed a bit, don't you think? They're more disciplined.
Look, they're really trying, Lindsay, without a doubt. Some of the best discipline I saw was in South Africa during the 70s when gold really exploded because gold had gone flat for 40 years, and the people were so desperate. And yet, they exercised very, very good discipline all through the 70s into the 80s. Most of the money, and the government helped them exercise discipline because the government gave them a much lower tax rate if they would put the money back into the ground and distribute it. So you had government working in tandem with the mining companies, and that's how South Africa saw its way through the 80s and 90s. This real low gold price falling all the way down to 250, 260, 270. Because they were disciplined and they put the money into the ground. We saw a lot of undisciplined action, though, in the new millennium, not just in the world, but in South Africa. And you're right. When gold ran in the new millennium, we saw incredible demands, insane demands put on the producers. And you had the legislation to turn things around, dramatically punitive legislation. So all of a sudden, here's the gold miners. They've all been disconnected from the traditional mining houses that kind of kept control for 100 years. So you had individual gold mines with individual management. You had diverse shareholders all over the world. So some managers are more disciplined than others, but they were all under pressure from the unions, suppliers, under pressure from the communities and the government. So you did have a lot of undisciplined cost increases and expenses. And managers are saying, geez, I got all these forces against me. I'm just going to pad my pay packet any way I can because I'm not going to be here in 2 or 3 years. Probably won't have an industry in 2 or 3 years at this pace. So long story short, so far we've seen real good discipline because these are all orphan gold mines. Now, they're not controlled by mining houses. They're all controlled with their own management pretty much, their own directors, and diverse shareholders. So they know they're on their own. There's no one to take care of them if they mess up. And the government and the unions and communities are different than I've seen them in at least 15 years. They're really going alongside the industry saying, Let's not blow it. Let's keep this industry alive as long as we can. Let's just retain jobs and hopefully add jobs. So it is different this time, the way they're managing so far.
It's almost as though the unions haven't had their sting drawn, if you see what I mean, but they are starting to work with management because maybe they also sense that management has changed. Now, you mentioned in the 1970s, the South African government working in tandem with the mines. Is the new regime starting to work in tandem with the mines as well?
Not officially, but I think unofficially, if that makes sense. In other words, they're not criticizing the industry so much. They're not making all these demands on the industry so much. They don't seem to be introducing more and more punitive legislation. And these are the things they've been doing for 20 years. Same with the unions. You don't see them demanding so much. They're not demanding crazy things. There's almost no work stoppages, almost no strikes. Communities, you know, they're not making all these demands. They're not burning and protesting and blocking the mine. Now, it is early days yet. If we all know if these metal prices stay where they are now, these demands will filter through. Mm. But yes, so far, all the things I just mentioned aren't happening. Is government rolling back any of the punitive legislation, any of the strangling legislation? Are they rolling back or rescinding any of it in an effort to promote mine development, to promote new investment, to promote job increases? No, I haven't seen any of that yet. I'm not even sure I've heard it spoken about. And usually you have to hear people talking about it before you can expect to see it.
Okay. Just before we leave gold, because I was going to do gold at the end, but we've brought it forward.
Okay.
The gold price, let's call it $1,950 an ounce. The long-term average is what? Because you're going to say, Lindsay, this is too frothy, it's going to come back. But it may only come back in 2 years. What is your what are your thoughts on the gold price? Because you're a perma-bear.
Yeah. On the current gold price, I think it is too high based on the metrics that I traditionally use. And we can say reversion to the mean isn't a great metric. Okay, let's say it's not. Let's say this 500-year average of $600 is not applicable. Okay, is the last 100-year average, is that applicable?
You know,
and that would probably be about $700. But is gold related to the increase in money supply? I think Goldman Sachs or someone did that calculation, and they said if it was, gold would be $33,000 an ounce. So, boy, if it's related to money supply and they're right, you want to keep going long even here. I think history weighs quite a bit on this. And if it's averaged somewhere between $700 an ounce for the last 40, 50 years, should it now be trading at three times that? I don't doubt it's justified going up because we've had all these stimulus packages in the trillions. And we never had that in 2008, did we? Like, we definitely didn't have that in the Russian crisis, the tequila crisis, and the Asian crisis of the 90s. These are massive, massive capital creations and injections. So without a doubt, everything should be going up. Any kind of asset should be inflated just because we've probably added, I don't know, 10, 12, 12 trillion to world money supply. But say we've added 10, 20, 50% to money supply. Gold's now gone from an average of 1250, that's what it was for the last 6 years, 1250 to 1900. So, boy, that's about a 50% increase. I'm not going to buy gold long here. And I definitely think it's going to come back before the end of the year. But I don't know how far down it's going to come. Maybe it's going to find a new base instead of 1250. Maybe the new base is 1500, 1600. And maybe it's all irrelevant. We're in a new dimension entirely, and it goes to 3,000.
Maybe it does. But even at 1500, 1600, the new base that you've just speculated upon, the South African gold mines will be doing pretty well because they produce it at what, $1,000, $1,100 an ounce?
They're probably producing at about $1,200 an ounce, okay. Lindsay, but the rand has weakened a lot. So yeah, you could be right. Yeah, this rand has gone from what, 14.5 to 16.5, if it just stays here. So you're probably right. We're probably producing now at around 1,100 an ounce on average, but you just know there's too many social and union and government pressure to allow working costs to stay at inflation. They are going to be making demands. And so our working costs will go up. Suppliers are always quick to jump on. Eskom, you know, their biggest expense after labor is Eskom. So we will continue to have way above inflationary cost increases on the mines. And those cost increases get larger when the metal price is doing well, because all those participants know they can get away with it. So it will catch up. We're still the highest cost producer in the world, and we'll continue to be the highest cost producer in the world.
Okay, let's get rid of gold now. It's a good analysis. Thank you very much. And I can sense you're a reluctant bull. I just sense it in the back of your mind. You're thinking, it could go to $33,000 an ounce. That's what Goldman Sachs says. It's currently $1,950. Yeah, maybe it'll go to $2,500. Okay, let's move on to other things, though. And I want to talk about your business, because you're director of mining at Mergents. Are mines starting to become interesting again to foreign investors and to local investors? I mean, when I say mines, I don't mean mining shares. I mean opening up new shafts, new tranches, new mines that have been dormant for a while. Are you starting to see some activity?
I'm glad you differentiated that, Lindsay, because that's a really important differentiation. South African mine shares and South African mine assets and property. And you're 100% right to differentiate, because foreigners can buy our shares in a second. Mm. They can buy it in the morning, sell it at lunch, and buy it back. And that's exactly what they do. And that's what the country and the government and all of us here are trying to change. We want to get bricks and mortar investment. We don't want this hot money investment that only buys our bonds and only buys our listed companies and then gets out of them just as quick. We want bricks and mortar. And that's why policy and legislation attitude are so important, and actions. You know, actions are as important, if not more important, than all those put together. No, we're not seeing very much new bricks and mortar investment. The existing companies, yes, they are continuing to expand, but that's limited expansion. You know, as far as new shafts being sunk, it's still negative. Negative means we're still closing more shafts than we're sinking. And we won't just dwell on gold, platinum as well. We've got to get that trend back above zero. You know, for years and years, this country is averaging something like, I don't remember, was it 10, 12, 15 kilometers of shafts a year, you know, and get up to a high of 20, 25 kilometers a year and maybe get down to a low of 5. But we've had negative shafts being developed here almost this whole millennium. And that's what we got to get away from. We need foreign investment to build new mines, to open up closed mines. And it's very, very faint. It's most of the new mines or expansions we got, it's locally generated. And I think most of the world's been pretty consistent. It says we can't bring in any investment until there's policy changes. You have policies that have bringing you to your knees, that have brought this country into the horrible shape it's now in economically, socially. And until you guys can make policy changes that attract foreign money, that promote growth, that promote business, we just can't bring money in. So we do see announcements by politicians that some money's coming in, but I'd have to dig really deep to see how much foreign money is going into bricks and mortar mining investment. Not much.
So are there still barriers that need to be withdrawn? Are there still discussions that need to be had between the public and the private sector? And when I say the private sector, I mean the foreign private sector, and say, listen, we've got this stuff under the ground. We have been punitive in our rules in the past, and therefore we've excluded you from participating. But now, because of what's happened recently and because of what happened over the last 10 years, we need you. So please come in. Is that ever going to happen with the new minister? Or the relatively new minister?
Look, we are starting to see it. We're starting to see where the mining industry, especially the small and mid-sized mining industry, is talking directly with the DMR, and they're talking, how can we do this 12J type investment where people get a double tax deduction, very similar to what Canada's got, similar to what Australia's got, and we need that to promote. So the DMR is in conversation, how can we do this? So it is someone They acknowledge the problem. They're actually talking about it. Now, that's very small. You know, it's great that you're trying to help the small and mid-cap guys. It always sounds good, looks good in the press, but we know you want the big guys. You know, it takes you just as much energy to have a meeting for an hour with a big company as a little company. But boy, if you can convince a big company to invest here, they're going to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars in $1 or $2. Whereas if you get a couple little companies, you know, it's the same paperwork, it's the same time spoken, but how many dollars are they going to bring in? How much? But we're happy for any positive signs from government. And this is a positive sign. It's not getting all the way up to cabinet. You're not seeing the president talking about it or the National Executive Council of Six. But at least you're seeing some of the people in the DMR talking to industry about it. So it's a flicker of light, but it's windy out there. It's damp, and candles need a lot more than just this.
Okay. Finally, what are the commodities that might be attractive to foreign investors that are under the South African earth? Is it iron ore? Is it coal? Is it gold? Is it PGM resource? Is it chrome? If you were a foreign investor and all the regulations suddenly became a little bit easier, all the barriers were removed or became a little bit friendlier, what would you be looking at in South Africa as a mining investor? Bricks and mortar.
Okay. Right now, the way things stand, it's bulks, starting with iron ore, and then going rapidly to manganese, rapidly to chrome, and then pretty rapidly to coal. So yes, the foreigners, they like bulks. It's highly capital intensive, low min, and it's surface. So it's easy to get started. Your cash flow comes quite quickly. Foreigners don't like South African mining projects that take lots of people. You know, more people equals more trouble, more problems, more risk. And it's kind of sad because we know open pit mining is terribly destructive, 10 times more destructive to the environment than underground. It hires only a tenth as many of the people, and up to half its costs go offshore. So from South Africa's viewpoint, we want foreigners to come here and invest in underground mines. But that era is long past. That era is decades past. So foreigners right now, with no change in legislation, they're looking at the bulks and they're looking at open pit. With certain changes in legislation, they will start looking at certain underground operations, but they'd be very mechanized operations. Again, their big requirement is they don't want too many men. More men equals more trouble, more risk, more worry, and they think less profits. And also, underground needs Eskom. And unfortunately, because this country has plundered Eskom and hit it from every angle, it is so rickety, so high cost, so unreliable that a foreign mining investor, he wants to avoid Eskom as much as possible. So he knows open pit or maybe underground trackless needs less Eskom than underground. But even the open pits, they still need Eskom to a degree, but investors want to minimize. They want to minimize all the risks. We'll need a lot of legislative changes before any foreigner here ever thinks of doing deep level gold mining. I just can't see it ever until they have Elon Musk here with a phaser gun and he can cut shafts and do declines with his phaser gun and drive down an electric Muskmobile. I can't see him wanting any underground shafts, platinum, base metals, or gold.
You're the most experienced mining analyst and mining man in South Africa, in my opinion. You're the director of mining at Mergence. How many times have you had calls over the last year or so from overseas investors saying, listen, take me around a few of your mines and give me your opinion of the South African environment? Have you had a lot of those calls?
No, I haven't had a lot, but I'm probably getting two or three a week. And that's pretty good, Lindsay, because I was not getting more than two or three a year for probably the last 5 years. So if you go from two or three a year, now, let's be serious, maybe I was getting not one a month, and now I'm definitely getting two or three a week. So that is a real welcome. And they've just got a more positive attitude. They're also looking at a broader range of commodities. They're even looking at some shallow underground. So it's not just the frequency of the parties coming, but their requirements are more realistic, less restrictive. And I'd like to think the quality of the callers are getting a little bit better. But most of the calls so far are parties that I'd talked to previously, but it's good because these parties weren't calling me and they gave me the reasons they weren't, and now they're calling again. So it is a real change. I have not seen interest in mining in South Africa from outside the country like this in 6-7 years. And even the local interest is double or triple what I've seen the last 5 or 6 years. It's really changed. It's really positive, which is ironic with what the virus and the consequences of the virus have done to the rest of the world. That mining is all of a sudden so attractive here. I love it. It's great.
Very good.
Long may it last.
Yeah, very much so. And take advantage of it. That's fantastic news, and it bodes well for the future. It's obviously not going to you're not going to turn on the tap immediately, but in the years to come, it does bode well for the economy. And let's go quickly away from South Africa and go to the United States of America, because you're from Idaho, and Mr. Trump is going to be up for re-election on November the 3rd. What's going to happen?
Boy, I have no idea. After seeing the upended results of some of these elections, like Brexit, Boris Johnson, Donald Trump versus Hillary, man, this one, if I go on the indications that I'm reading, they say Trump's going to lose by a mile. They say he's thrown it away. It's not even going to be close. Mm. But I'm discounting that. And maybe I'm discounting it because I'm so far away, or because I'm old and jaded and I've heard it before, because the sting of Brexit and the Trump-Hillary upset, et cetera, is pretty fresh in my mind. So I don't have a clue, Lindsay. And would I bet very much money either way? No, because if I had a clue, or I thought I did, I would bet some money. But the messages I'm getting aren't that they love Biden, but it's that there's enough anti-Trump people, they just want him out, and they're less worried who takes his place. And what's that going to mean for the world? I don't know, because I think Trump, he had some good aspects as far as keeping some of the tough foreign powers that had been intimidating America for, I think, a long time. He had the ability to keep them off balance, and I think he let them know he meant business. Maybe he was a little too strong on China. Now they've gone in and grabbed Hong Kong. And look, he's not going to send foreigners in. So I think Hong Kong said if Russia was able to get Crimea so easy under the previous administration, we shouldn't have any trouble getting Hong Kong. Are they now going to get Taiwan as well?
Probably.
They may. You know, yeah. If they get a Joe Biden in, Joe Biden's sure not going to want to send troops offshore. And he's going to be less intimidating to these countries than Donald Trump. But maybe we need some policy coherence. And is Biden going to be able to unite America? It's probably hasn't been this split, this polar since the Civil War. I don't know who's going to bind it.
Peter Major, thank you so much for your insight. That's Peter Major, who's the Director of Mining at Mergence in Cape Town. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.